This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter. Today we talk to Chris Hexton, founder of Vero. You'll learn how they used educational content to get their first 10 customers, and you'll also learn his three favorite email marketing tips for early stage bootstrappers. Check it out.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Chris Hexton of Vero. Chris, why don't you give us a little backstory on how you started Vero?
Sure. So Vero is an email marketing company, in particular behavioral email marketing, and we've been going for about 18 months now, so sort of mid-2012 we really began, and it was founded by myself and James, so two of us. And yeah, it's been a really interesting 18 months, and we've learned a lot, we've had a lot of fun, but definitely lots of lessons in there.
Yeah, I'd love to kind of to learn more about those early days, why you built it, and what it looked like with the two of you working. Were you doing some consulting work?
We sort of, I think the germ of the idea for Vero for us came from consulting work we had done. So James and I did have a Rails consultancy where we built e-commerce stores for people and other software products for people who were starting their own businesses or expanding their businesses. And we always found for those projects, as is obvious, that those people would want email built in, email as part of the life cycle of converting their customers. And we, you know, so we build that, whatever, and we just use Action Mailer and Rails for those who are familiar with that. And then, you know, those people would sort of realize at some point that you can't just leave it alone. You've sort of got to work with it. And email's really a function of marketing, not a function of development. So they would then be like, oh, well, you know, these emails are doing pretty well, but we want to play with them. We want to edit them. We want to change when they go out, how they go out. We want to A/B test these things. We can't do any of that stuff. What do you guys got? You guys are the experts. And we'd be like, well, you could go and buy a product like ExactTarget or Responsys, or if you're a B2B company, Marketo, maybe HubSpot. But these things are all $800, you know, $2,000 a month. They're expensive pieces of software. So most of the people we worked with anyway couldn't afford that. And so we sort of thought it was crazy that there was nothing out there between MailChimp or the MailChimp autoresponder, which is relatively dumb, so to use a harsh word, but you know, it's very, very linear. And nothing between that and then these big bad boys at the other end of town. And we sort of thought, well, it seems odd when all these people have been asking for it. So that's where the original idea came from. But we didn't start working on Vero whilst we were consulting. We went through an incubator in Sydney, and we actually went through the incubator working on another software idea, or we got into the incubator with this other software idea, which was a product similar to Harvest or FreshBooks. And that was, I don't think that was a fatal business, but the incubator was good for two reasons. It gave us a sort of kick to stop consulting and really focus, because that was one of the requirements of getting into the incubator. And then also to be cold-hearted about something we'd built, you know, the Harvest-like product, where, you know, you've got to be sure, it might have some paying customers, it might be going okay, but you've really got to start to look, well, is this viable? You know, what's the competition? What's the market space like? Is this the product for me? Where's your passion for it? Rah, rah, rah. And none of those boxes really got ticked. And so by the end of the incubator, we had realized it wasn't for us. So we started validating a couple of ideas, and the main one that stood out, because we'd had problem in the actual, you know, we'd actually dealt with customers who had this problem, was this idea around lifecycle or behavioral email marketing. So that's really where it came from. And we started building it sort of probably mid-ish May. And I think the first email ever was sent in June 2012 through Vero.
Very cool. So where did you find some of those early customers?
Yes. So our very, very first customer was, you know, someone in our network, so founder of another business that we knew personally. But so I don't think that's that interesting, because everyone probably has one of those. But then, you know, numbers 2 to 10 are the more interesting story. And how do you find strangers that you don't know to buy a product? And that's obviously an exciting day. So for us, the all the way along up until now, the primary acquisition channel has been content marketing, and in particular, blogging's been the mainstay there. And that you know, a blog post is how we got those first 9 other strangers to buy our product. And so for us, we wanted to experiment with consulting. So I guess the backstory, content. So the backstory to that is that we'd gone through this incubator. You know, we had a small pool of cash from that. There was only 2 of us. We're young guys, so we didn't have too many costs, fortunately. We sort of thought, well, we've got some profits from the consultancy as well. Let's see if we can do this thing without raising money and just by, you know, being smart with the cash we've got. So that's what we set out to do. And we sort of thought, well, we don't have a ton of money to spend on PPC. You know, advertising on Google for either word term email marketing or anything similar is ridiculous. So what can we do? And content seemed like the obvious thing. So we wrote a blog post that directly led to those first 9 signups, which was which we posted on Hacker News and Reddit, but in particular Hacker News drove a lot of traffic. And that blog post was the title of it was "Making Email Marketing Better: Building the Mixed Panel for Email." And so that post, I think, drove about 300 or 400, I can't remember the exact number, but you know, a lot for us at the time, trial signups in overnight or in a period of sort of 48 hours. And we were still obviously in beta. We didn't really have a product at that point. But through that cohort of people, we were able to start talking meaningfully to some strangers about what they would want to use, what they would pay for, and some of those people fortunately ended up paying. So that was really a great sign of validation for us.
And that was a pretty strategic title that you picked. Why did you use Mixpanel?
Yeah. So I think the trick with content, yeah, I guess I've learned a lot of this now, but our hypothesis at the time was obviously, well, we need to get this in front of people who care or we think will care about the product. So for us, we were fortunate in that place was Hacker News, and that was something we were interested in anyway, which probably comes back to having a passion or an interest in the product you're building or the space you're building for. So we thought, righto, well, let's give Hacker News a go. There's going to be online marketers there. There's going to be people who run businesses there. There's, you know, an interesting community there that care about new stuff. It's rock and roll. So, but rather than posting a title like "Check out our new product," which everyone does, we thought, well, maybe we can post something a little more interesting that'll get people to click through. So I guess the thing about the title we chose, and it was, some of this was subconscious for sure, but the reason it worked was because, I think, Mixpanel is a popular company. It's a Y Combinator company, and obviously Hacker News is, you know, Y Combinator affiliated. So a lot of people on there love Mixpanel. It's a great company. They've done really, really well, got a great product, etc. So saying you're going to be the Mixpanel for email is probably quite an arrogant thing to say. Or there's an element of, yeah, who are these random guys, and why, who are they bold enough to say that they're going to do what Mixpanel did for analytics for email? So I think that's why a lot of people would have clicked through. It resonated very specifically with that audience. It was a sort of title where it was a little bit controversial, so people were going to click. So that's why we went with that title. But I think the secret to actually getting the post to work was, then, you know, it's all well and good to get on the front page of Hacker News, but you won't be there very long if what you've written is crap. So actually writing a quality post with some really meaningful thoughts in there is what got people signing up for the beta or the trial.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
So we've been talking to a lot of people about content marketing, and it does tend to come back to blogging. But what I found really interesting with you guys, given that you're an email app, is how you've used email, and specifically the email courses that you're doing. And I'm curious to know how you started doing those, and what the conversion has been like compared to doing something like blogging, and how that's been working out for you.
Yeah, so I think the way we thought about the first course was, we've got a blog, it's going pretty well, we've got people signing up to the blog. We just send those people, and we play a lot more with this now, but at the time we just sent them a single email a week saying, here's what we've written this week, you know, email marketing tip of the week, here's the cool article. We had a lot of people saying, you guys are doing really good writing here, this stuff's really helpful, I love getting your emails. So that was all really, really positive. But we weren't really doing very much to get those people signed up to the product. We weren't explicitly making many asks, you know, hey, try out our trial, hey, here's an offer or whatever. So we thought, well, how can we bridge this gap as well as creating a new resource that we can funnel people into that may never have heard of Vera at all before? So it's sort of like, well, how can we get people who have come into that blog list over here into the free trial of Vera? And that was one of the driving factors. So we created this new course. The first one was about a year ago, I think, at the end of 2012, start of 2013. And the course was, yeah, designed to sort of have a best of 7 reasonably short emails with really good practical tips based on all the stuff we'd written about over the previous 6 to 9 months. And so we pulled that together and started, you know, advertising it on our blog. We also got some people to retweet it and to mention it in some guest posts as the call to action, those sort of things, and started feeding people into it. And so we're running another course now, and I think we're trying to weave it into the fabric so it's a long-term thing. But it's been really good for us. The first course, which is obviously the base for the one we're doing now anyway, definitely saw, you can see, the opens and clicks increasing as you go through the email series as people get further and further down. And, as a whole, the course, I think the conversion rate was about 12.5. So sort of nearly 13% of people were then signing up for a free trial, after somewhere in this email course, generally towards the end, emails 5, 6, 7. And that for us was really awesome because it was a lot easier to get people into this course, even if it was coming from a guest post or something, because it's quite a good ask. It's like, hey, we'll teach you stuff for free if you give us your email. That's the whole premise of these things. So people put their email down for that, and then 13% of people were actually becoming trial customers, which was great. So it was a new, an awesome new way for us to get some trial customers on board. And then on top of that, those customers were further along in the buying cycle, right, because they'd been educated about what the hell our product did. So it's been really useful for us.
Chris, you mentioned earlier that it has taken about 18 months, or Vero launched about 18 months ago. And something that we've been hearing a lot from our listeners and our audience is that people are struggling to kind of grasp, what length of time does it take between launching a product and really hitting a success point or at least a break-even point. Can you talk about your experience with that and kind of how long it took you to hit break even?
Yeah, for sure. So I think I actually don't know the exact date that we became break even, but I would hazard a guess and I know that's sort of crazy. Like, why don't you know? But it was just two of us just for a long time, at least for the first 12 months. So James and I, we occasionally outsourced a few things here and there. Probably a bit less than 12 months. So it's probably about two of us for 10 months or something like that. So for us, we didn't need a ton of money to become break even. So I think it probably took us about 10 to 12 months to sort of hit base break even. But what we found bootstrapping is that there's always sacrifice. And so for us, it's been, we got to that point and we're like, okay, great. Well, we're break even. We could pay ourselves. But then you sort of think, well, do we want to do that and take this cash out of the business, or should we, continue to live frugally and reinvest some more money by, hiring someone, or maybe we could get better architecture or speed up the product or invest this in this form of marketing. So I think one of the challenges, the way I look at it is, if you're bootstrapping businesses, you're building this asset and everything's completely under your control when you're in charge of your own destiny. So do you want to, take more money off your salary and perhaps have a nicer lifestyle? Awesome. Do that once you hit that break-even point, or do you want to reinvest that and continue to grow? And so that's generally what we've been doing, because we think there's a real opportunity in this marketplace. And so we've we got to that point of break even, then we went a little further, and then we hired someone, and then we break even again. So then we hired someone again, and so on. But it's something that James and I've always been happy to do. So that's been our journey. And I do think you're right in that. I think it takes the media only covers what I would say outliers, and everyone should aim to be an outlier, or at least I try to. But I think that also when you read about the success of a startup, or when you talk to a founder, I think the human brain forgets the bad things. I think that's true of anything in life. Most people don't look back on their lives and go, well, that was terrible, that was terrible, that was terrible. And so when you ask someone about their experience and, hey, how were those early years, I think they gloss over a lot of the shit that they went through and a lot of how long it really took, when they really had this initial idea. And, we're still young enough, hopefully, to tell it exactly as it was. But I think as you get further, in 10 years, be interested to hear what I say, right? And I think, I think it takes a lot longer than public perception makes clear. But at the same time, 10 months isn't really that long, or 12 months isn't that long. Even a year and a half isn't that long if you think about it. If you do manage to build an asset that grows and you've got a great company that you love working on, it's not that big a sacrifice in many ways, at least I think.
That's true. I think it's really a matter of perspective. And you do, tend to get discouraged when you flip open your computer and you see some new product out of nowhere who's hit it big. And you really forget about the
I would say the average startup who puts all the work in, and it does take some time and it's a slow road. And it's really nice to hear from people like you who are open about, you know, the hard work it really took and the time it took to get there.
Yeah. I think too, I think a lot of those stories of people hitting it big are usually XNX raised a lot of money. And obviously you can't raise money with nothing. Well, usually you should have some form of traction or something, but I think, I think that definitely forms a skewed view. And I think you've also got to be honest with what you want. You know, let's use the example of Snapchat. I personally would find it hard to run Snapchat. I mean, sure, now maybe if someone was going to pay me $3 billion, but you know, initially I would find it hard to get up every day and work on a product that I could not see having how I was going to make money. That would be challenging for me personally. And maybe that's just where the stage I'm at in my entrepreneurial journey or something like that. But you know, much more comfortable working on a B2B product, and maybe it'll take a little longer, but I'd like to think we can build an amazingly large company anyway. So, I think the big part of it's just personal and what you're comfortable with. That at least, I think you've got to bear that in mind too when you read these stories. The grass is always greener, you know.
Talk to us about the process that you worked through to get there, to where you're just using the number of emails sent. And if you ever tried anything else.
Yeah. So the initial, the whole research behind our pricing back on day one was as simple as we don't want to charge less than $50 a month for whatever we're going to build here. So we said we'll charge $50 a month. And then we thought, if people don't want to pay $50 a month, why not? We've got to make this product good enough that they will. So that's how we began in terms of where to start our pricing. And then obviously, you have bigger tiers than that. And for us, we sort of thought, well, what are the main drivers of costs on our side? They should be the drivers of what we're charging. And so the two big things for us are we obviously collect our customers' data. So there's a cost of holding that data and manipulating it, segmenting it, whatever. And then there's a cost of sending emails. So we talked to customers about those, and basically the answer we got back was, well, it makes much more sense for you to charge via the email. And everyone seemed to think that would be a very fair way to charge because they can start off simple. Yeah, as they collect more data, they send more emails, they make more money, they get more value, so they're happy to pay more as their volume increases. So we sort of we reviewed that a year later, so sort of September 2013, and we toyed with changing the model to being around subscribers. But based on customer feedback, and after doing analysis of what would be more profitable and whatnot, it seemed that the volume base was still the way to go. So we've carried on with that. So we were definitely a lot more scientific when we did the review last year. But it's to start off with, it was just what are the cost drivers, what's the minimum we want to charge, and then sense check that with customers. As with everything you do, a customer's happy with that, does it make sense? And if the answer is yep, then away you go.
So continuing with kind of the early stage optimizations, what kind of tips do you have for people who want to write an email campaign and are just starting to build their list?
Yeah, so I guess three main things for people who are building it, they're starting a company online and really wanting to use email or wondering, well, how the hell do you use email at all? I guess the three things that people would ask me the most that are in that situation. So the first one would be, people often ask, how often should I send or when should I send? Is it okay to send? So the point there is that it's early on, it's sort of nerve-wracking, or even you're a bit afraid to hit send to this list that you've started building. So that's definitely the most common thing I see. And I think it makes sense. It's human nature. I was the same. Most people I talked to were the same. You're starting to build this company. You're really, really passionate about it. You believe in it. You've finally got these people to put down their emails for some sort of blog list or a beta form or whatnot. And you'd hate to send these people the wrong thing in case you annoy them, in case they hate you, in case they leave, in case they don't become paying customers. There's always that fear that you'll screw it up. But I think my advice is always, you've got to start somewhere. And even more than that, the source of people that are subscribing, early on in your company's life, are passionate people. They've put their email down for something that doesn't exist yet. That, it's just a couple of blokes with a landing page on the internet. And so I think you've got to trust that these people are going to be interested in what you have to say, that they're going to be supportive. These are going to be the guys that help you grow your business from nothing. They're going to be those first 10 paying customers. So you've really just got to start talking to them, as regularly as you can, and being helpful and honest. So that would be number one, which I guess leads nicely into number two, which would be, you know, people ask, well, okay, so I got to learn to hit send and I'm no longer afraid. What do I actually write? And so that's where this comes in. You know, be honest, be yourself. And I always say, talk to these early subscribers as though they were your friends. So, you know, tell them about the journey you're going through, what advancements you've made this week, what awesome new idea or new feature you've finally pulled together in the beta. If you've got questions or you need validation or you're not sure about something, ask them that. You know, you'd send an email to a friend or a mentor and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking of doing. What do you reckon's best? A, B, C. Ask these people that. All that stuff is trust building. It's, you know, it's honest. It's not in your face. It's not a pain. It's not salesy. Most people are really happy to receive that stuff, and in particular the sorts of customers who've shown interest in this concept that you're willing to build out. So, you know, if you take that approach, I don't think you can really go wrong. And part of that is, you know, email from the founder or from someone who's an individual at the company. You know, don't email with a big fancy template from, you know, sales at blah, blah, blah. There's a right time, I think, in your business's life to look bigger than you perhaps are if you're trying to land some bigger deals or something. But early on, you know, don't lie. I mean, use that smallness to build credibility, to build trust, and, you know, in a way become friends with these early customers of yours. And I think they'll pay it back to you. To give a good example of that, definitely one of our largest earlier customers. I mean, you know, we're really lucky, and we've still got so many of those customers that signed up 18 months ago, and many of them now become friends. You know, in particular, there's one who I think of who has become a great mentor in a way. Their business is a lot further along than ours. They get value out of our product, and they've just been so much insightful advice they've given to me. So I mean, that's a great example of that. Just came from talking to this guy honestly about our journey and sharing what we're doing, and it's been awesome. So I can definitely attest to that. And number three, I guess, is just around building your list early on. And again, I think in this case, don't be afraid to ask. And this doesn't just go for building a list; it goes for getting paying customers. But don't be afraid to ask people to put down their email. Don't be afraid to ask people to pay money. You know, I think this is, I put this at number three because I think this has become quite standard thanks to LaunchRock and other, you know, Unbounce and other platforms that make it easy to collect lists of people early on. But don't be afraid to try pop-ups, or, you know, you're trying to get these people's attention, you're trying to get their email, you're not planning on spamming them, so don't feel bad about it. You're going to be providing them with useful, interesting stuff, and they've come to your site for a reason. So don't be afraid to do that. And a good example from my own experience is when I started guest posting for other blogs and trying to grow our blog subscriber list. You know, I always found it sort of, you know, you're doing guest posting, one, to share your ideas with a larger audience, and then two, to get that audience interested in you, to make them your audience in a way. And that's, you know, that's the power of guest posting. But I always found it weird that it would be okay with the site I was guest posting on to have a call to action of some sort, you know, to ask people to, hey, visit the Vera blog and put down your email. And that I always found that really weird. I always felt odd asking for that. And that's something I had to get over anyway, because it's the whole reason you're doing it in the first place. So, you know, not being afraid to ask people's emails so you can actually grow that list quicker, as quickly as you can, is probably good advice as well.
I really appreciate you coming on here, Chris, and kind of sharing your story with us. It's extremely helpful to hear that in 18 months you've been able to grow, and yet there is still, you know, there's still been struggles along the way. So
I want to say thank you, because we've been going for about 9 months with Hookfeed and Minimalytics, and the way that you put it really put things in perspective, that to build an asset that, or to basically build a company that you love working at, over 12 months really isn't a long time compared to any other business you'd be building. But the way that we've been doing it, we've been, you know, going through savings this whole time and basically taking a big leap of faith after leaving our jobs to build these products. So it's really cool to think of it that way as you go on and things aren't growing as fast as you would have hoped, as you realize that no SaaS company really takes off despite what people say. It's really helpful to think of it that way. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, obviously, as you said, I mean, it is a leap of faith and it is risky. But that's obviously all in our personalities to take that risk. But I think that, Yeah, in many ways, you know, if you were saving for a deposit on a house, that would take a lot of time, right? And so instead of doing that, you're putting that capital in a way into something else that you believe is going to work out. So you've obviously got to be sensible and level-headed, make sure you're working on something that will work out. But if you've got that ticked, then yeah, it's going to take a long time, just as it would take a long time to do anything. And yeah, I think more and more people, fortunately, more and more SaaS companies are sharing their numbers and the real story. So it's really cool to see that happen.
For anyone out there who is starting to dabble in email marketing and wants an absolutely amazing resource, visit the Vero blog. It's blog.getvero.com. It's filled with just incredibly educational posts and charts and graphs and everything. So check that out.
Yes, please do. Thank you.
Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty drone to take home tonight. That drone cool, but I hate that drone. Chocolate chip cookie dough in a sugar cone. Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty drone to take home tonight. Russians and flushing. We could tussle if they look at my cousin girl.